In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
On the night of October 22nd, 1966, the people of Tallahassee were celebrating the victory of FSU over Mississippi State in the local football game.
However, at the Sims family house in Mural Court, tragedy was taking place.
When 17-year-old Norma Sims returned home, she found a horrific scene with her mother, father, and sister bound and shot.
Investigators have tried for years to find the murderer and reasons for these murders, but to this day, it remains an open case.
Will we ever find the culprit behind these gruesome murders? Welcome back to Not Another True Crime Podcast. And that's always the question.
Will we
know what happened? We're your partners in wine and crime. I fucked up the intro.
That's just been this month. Because I was like, because I feel like I haven't recorded with you in 9 years, but also yesterday. And it's like, I don't know what's happening in January. We're all falling apart.
I know. And you're not drinking, which I feel like is probably making, like, I feel like it gives other people clarity. But like for me, I think it would just make me more loopy.
Oh, there was that Tinks girl on TikTok. She posted, she was like, dry January. I'm like so productive, but makes me happy. And I'm like, I am not feeling any of the productivity. But it's also making me realize, oh, I can't blame like being hungover for any of my laziness. It's just who I am as a person. And that's mainly what
organic.
I've come to terms with.
Yeah, I love that.
It's all natural.
But how are you feeling otherwise, like with the dry January stuff?
Honestly, good. It's like nice. It feels like it's like, I feel like I'm just like internally, like I tell myself my liver's feeling amazed. And I just like, it's not hot. Like it's a good moment. I kind of want to like intersperse like dry cleanse months here and there. Just like, for something to do. And also because I'm like, oh, it doesn't, like, I feel very hydrated, which I think is, I don't always feel that. Like the water, I like feel it in my body.
That is legit. Yeah, I honestly feel like I don't really drink that much. Like I just drink if I'm out with friends.
I know. And it's actually been fun because like going out to dinner and stuff like that, I'm like, oh, I can like have like iced tea and then like a decaf coffee.
Yes.
And my bill is $60 cheaper.
Oh my God, literally.
And also I'm like, oh yeah, I enjoy talking to these people because they're my friends. So I don't need like, it doesn't help. So it is good. It is nice to realize that like not every dinner needs to pair with a glass of wine, even though it is.
I love that. But when you're ready, we'll be back. We'll be back with some wine and crime, literally.
I mean, me and you are kicking off Casey's party. So we'll be, for OG listeners, we're going to be hungover, whatever, after that.
Oh my God, good times. Speaking of birthdays, actually, literally, because this crime happened on my birthday. And I'm like, it's always so weird when I see that. I'm like, oh my God, hey. And then wait, oh, that's horrible.
Because you do like the internal clap when you're like, oh my God, that's my day. And you're like, oh, it is not my
day. And you're like, yeah. Oh, I mean, this was like good like 30 years before I was born, almost.
That's true. Okay. So the dust was sort of settled, but it has never really settled.
Yeah. Well, this is a really interesting case. So shouts out to, I forgot the username. I'm sorry, but somebody DM'd this suggestion to us, Not Another True Crime, on Instagram. And yeah, it's weird because you don't think of Tallahassee as a small town. And I don't think it is. I think there were like 100,000 residents at the time of this murder. But
yeah.
To them, it felt like a small town. Like, it really, I just feel like, I don't know, in New York City, like, what's rocking New York City, you know? Like, I don't know, so much stuff is happening.
I was going to say that. I feel it's the unfortunate thing of so much happening in, like, New York and places like that where you're, like, it's almost like a sensory overload of processing versus this. And also, the way in which this murder happened and just kind of like how it was an entire like a majority of a family, it really rocked a lot of the neighboring towns because it started a whole fear thing where it's like, oh, this could this be me now? You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. Because I mean, this just seemed incredibly senseless. I mean, we're gonna obviously talk about it, of course, that's why we're here. a family is like murdered. It really is just senseless. And I think also it seemed like someone known to the family was responsible. Mm-hmm. So we are going to get into it. We're talking about the Sims family murders. So first off, who were the Sims family? Well, the patriarch, Robert, 42. He worked for the Florida Department of Education, and he was a director of data processing. And this was like in the 60s.
Yeah, I'm like, what data?
Man was ahead of the curve.
Yeah, really.
He got his PhD from FSU in 1961, and then he and his wife, Helen, moved to Tallahassee from Mississippi in the early 60s. So they were like kind of newish to the area, but not like brand spanking new, but they were like relatively newcomers. And they knew each other from Meridian, Mississippi. And so his wife, Helen, was 34, and she was a Sunday school teacher and a church secretary. And together they had three daughters, Norma Jeanette, who was 17, Judith Ann, 15, and Joy Lynn, 12. And also I will say that some of the media outlets referred to the eldest as Norma. Some called her Jean or Jeannie. Just some inconsistency that I found crop up. I mean, it's definitely possible that not everybody knew that she was like called this nickname.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the family was pretty loved, respected in the community. Like I said, you know, Robert was pretty respected for his job and his role. And then Helen was working at the church, and they lived in a brick ranch house on Muriel Court. Joy attended Raw Middle School, and she was a good student there. But something tragic befell them. So on October 22nd, 1966, Robert, Helen, and Joy Sims were found bound, shot, and stabbed to death in their home. And Joy, like we mentioned, was just 12 years old.
Oh, yeah.
And that day, this is relevant. There was a really big football game. It was Mississippi State versus FSU. So most of the people in Tallahassee were at the game. But I guess the Sims' parents and Joy stayed behind. And Norma went to the game, and Judith was babysitting that night.
Yeah, so the two of the older children were out and about, and at home it was just the parents with their, two of their siblings were out and about, and then the parents were home with one of them. And this is unfortunately where the crime happened, because when Norma returned home from the football game at around 11 p.m., she walked into a very, very nightmarish, horrible scene.
Truly.
So her mom and dad, Robert and Helen, were in their bedroom, bound with ties, and Robert had been shot in the head. And then her sister was shot and stabbed, and they were all blindfolded. So Joy was stabbed in the abdomen 6 or 7 times and ended up dying from those injuries, while Helen and Robert had both been shot in the head, and Robert died before he could get the medical attention, whereas Helen was taken to the hospital. She was still had a pulse when she was taken to the hospital, but she did ultimately die 9 days later. And of course, the two other daughters, Norma and Judith, because they were out of the house just by sheer coincidence of this game happening, because I'm sure Judith was babysitting for a family that went to the, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. by coincidence of this happening, they were out of the home, so they thankfully survived. Mm-hmm. And not shockingly, this was an investigation that really rocked the neighboring towns, everything, just everybody around. Because you hear, you're just like, that if we weren't at the game, could it have been us? We're like, the amount of times you're like, you can put yourself in a situation of like, we're home watching TV. Like, what could, what happened with this? And it made people want to also be like, how did this happen? Because it was such a grotesque, insane situation for something, and they needed answers. So early on, the crime scene was contaminated because just multiple people walking through the scene. Like, the Meridian Star said thousands of people walked to the crime scene, which I can't I mean, it was...
You guys need to fact check that figure. Like, thousands of people? I don't...
Yeah, because it is the thing. I know, like, what we know now and what we can do now with DNA and stuff like that wasn't in the 60s, but I also don't think an investigative team would be of 1,000 people. You know what
it's
I mean?
Not. Like, There's no way.
That would be some budget. But, I mean, so highest number you want to go 1,000, but at least a good amount, a handful at the lowest level, which I'm kind of feeling
definitely more people than were like investigating the crime scene walked through it and kind of contaminated it.
Yeah, so several people were walking into the house too, and the sheriff's office was not super experienced with handling a crime like this because, like we said, like it's sort of, I mean, like no one's ever totally used to like being like, okay, what happened here? I'm sure they're more so used to just kind of like the more clear cut situations, but now it's one where it's like, what are the answers? Neighbors also came over to see what was going on. And of course, that is where things just like, that just sends everything completely awry because who are now these random people coming into the house? And not only are they coming in, they are picking up souvenirs and taking it with them. So they're taking an ashtray.
That gave me like a big, was it the Sauter family or the Lawton family that had that fire? Like it gave me big, or no, I'm getting the two confused. The Sauter family was the fire. Mm-hmm. Lawson was like the ones where people were taking slices of the fruit cake.
Yes, the Lawson, yeah.
It gave me that energy. I'm like, no. Stop touching their stuff.
Yeah, why are you walking in? It's just like
even if it's not a crime scene, like that's fucking weird to do.
And like, what are you going to do with that? Yeah. So, and like, so ashtrays, leaving cigarettes to people. So people are adding things to the scene. Even the sheriff's investigators made a pot of coffee there, which
that's
like,
kind of funny because that's just like a boneheaded move that I can see their like reasoning behind it. They're like, well, it's going to be a long night. Let's put on a pot of coffee. But it's like, you idiots.
They're like, all right, let's set up shop, move all these people out of the bed so we can nap here too. Like, let's just really fuck up everything that could potentially lead to being solved.
So stupid.
Yeah.
But like, I understand what went wrong there.
And again, like, it's really, I mean, this, I guess you can chalk it up to the 60s being the 60s, maybe?
Yeah, who knows?
But when Norma did get home, she called RJ, also goes by Rocky, RJ Beavis, from the funeral home. And this happened because there was apparently no ambulance at the time.
I think he was like, he owned a funeral home, so he was a sort of first responder. Like, I don't even, that's what they had said. I watched this really good documentary, 641 Muriel Court.
On Vimeo.
Yeah. Oh, so good. You can watch it for free. It was done by a former FSU student for class. Oh, this is interesting. The first 911 call wasn't placed until 1968.
Huh.
So I wonder when it was like invented. I mean, this is 2 years.
Before
2 years before that. So I guess 911 didn't exist. It
wasn't a thing yet. And I guess you just needed people to get you to the hospital. And unfortunately, I guess hearses are good at transporting bodies.
I don't know.
That would also, I feel like if I was like needing medical attention and then I was just like, I like woke up and I was like, I'm in a hearse. I'm like,
You're like, what went wrong here?
Really be a mind fuck. Yeah. So Beavis attempted to loosen the bindings on Helen, Robert, and Joy, ultimately compromising the crime scene. But again, he was doing it to just, you know.
He was trying to like save their lives, but then it ended up contaminating the scene. Again, I don't really blame the guy. He owns a funeral home. He's not like a crime scene investigator.
Expert, no, not at all. This is, I mean, a perk of 911 being invented.
Yeah.
And here's the interesting thing, too, because I don't know, when I first was researching this story and learning about it, I assumed it was a break-in gone wrong, or heist gone wrong, because I would, like, in my mind, I was like, oh, okay, like, everyone's gonna be at this game. Let's go get some stuff. And then sort of being like, oh, shit, this family's here. And then things just escalating. Mm. But from what was reported, there was no evidence of a break-in or sexual assault. Jewelry and money was not missing.
And apparently there was cash just like out, like lying around.
Dangling, yeah. Well, not dangling, but yes, on a table. But a moment that they did say that Joy's underwear was found around her ankles. So that just sort of...
Yeah, so I don't know. The claim that there's no evidence of sexual assault seems like slightly sus to me. I mean, maybe there was no like physical trauma on the body, but I don't know. The underwear thing is a little bit
it's very, very weird. Yeah. So because of all this and not having sort of like X and Y to Z, the police had a very hard time establishing a motive.
What? Like, what do you mean X and Y to Z?
Like, because you go X, Y, Z. So it's sort of like they'd be like,
oh,
break in, steal something. A Z, a motive.
Got it. Okay. So he didn't have that.
We did not have, no, we had AZ, like, I don't, like.
Like Q.
ZZ Top. Yeah, I don't even know. Yeah, we got, oh yeah. God. We had SWV. Great band, but not helpful for crime kids. So because it also didn't seem like this family had any enemies. And like we were saying, like, they've been there a few years and were really loved by the community. So they didn't, it was not like they was like a decade long, like family ties to this place where like people could have, you know, anything like that. But they did, what they did think was that the killer, or plural, were known to the family. And they also, for around the time, they believe that the attack happened around 10:45, shortly before Norma returned home. So very...
Wow, that's quick.
Very, yeah. And a neighbor also said they heard screams at 10:45. So I'm sure that also would, correlate to...
That's really crazy then. It's like they got in. I'm like, they bound and stabbed and shot three people in like 15 to 30-ish minutes. That's wow.
Very insane.
That is
Which crazy. I guess, I don't know if that's more, like, adds into like, oh, someone they know, like they let them in the house and then things went awry or.
Right. Or maybe there was more than one person
mm-hmm.
who committed it.
That part.
So, like we said, this crime just really like rocked the community. Their funeral was packed. Halloween was kind of canceled that year, and which understandably it's like a week before, and people started locking their doors, which they hadn't really done before.
That always blows my mind. I feel like that is like a very modern thing, because like even my mom would always say, "Growing up, she's like, lock doors." I was like, "Yeah,
yeah."
I just lived in an apartment. I'm like,
that's the whole point of the door.
Yeah,
I don't get it. And this gave me like kind of, was it Son of Sam vibes? Because like stores
yes.
were selling out of guns. They also sold out of water guns because like women were filling them with ammonia for protection. Which, okay, I'm going to store that in the back of my head.
That's actually.
Yeah. And hardware stores ran out of like locks, bolts, knives, things like that. Like anything people could use to kind of feel like they're protecting themselves. And the surviving sisters moved to Alabama to live with an aunt. They really have understandably dropped off the grid since. Haven't really been heard from or really anything like that.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
As far as suspects, there's a lot, kind of. So,
So every time I like the documentary, I was like, oh, okay. And I was like, oh, there's someone else. Oh, okay. Okay. Yes.
I know. To the documentary's credit was great because I didn't really find any of these people in news articles, but they really pretty much turned up a lot of suspects. And then they were like, people thought it was this guy, but here's why it couldn't have been this guy.
That's what I was very interested in researching this. I was like, I really had to lean on the documentary, which is fine because it was very well done. But like a lot of the local, I don't know if it was just because maybe they weren't transferred on the to the .com or something like that because it happened in the 60s. But like there wasn't a ton about this. Besides the fact that
which
it happened.
Yeah, which is weird because to me, Tallahassee is like a well-known city.
Yeah.
And this is a well-known like homicide that happened in this city. So it's weird. I could only find like a Medium article and like other just like sketchy true crime Wikipedia sites.
Oh, coldcase.net or something. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to waste
not even .net. Yeah. Oh, true. I feel like .net would almost seem more legitimate, but yeah, you're right. Like coldcasefiles2.com. And I'm
yeah. Or it's cold, spell like C-O-L-E-D. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah, exactly. So as far as suspects, the neighbors told police they hadn't really noticed anybody, you know, unusual go into the house that day. One potential lead had to do with the fact that special granny knots were used to bind the family, and the killer or killers used items from the Sims' house to restrain them, like stockings, lingerie, socks, ties. I don't really know what the type of knot has to do with it. I mean, it's a type of knot used for binding. It's not as good as a square knot. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't seem like super intricate.
Because that's what I was wondering. I tried to research to be like, oh, is a granny knot taught to only like specific people? And I was like,
not really.
Doesn't seem like it. No, it's
no. I googled it. It gave me like a lot of results about climbing.
Which I mean, like, okay, good to know. Good, yeah, so further like, cementing that I'm not climbing anywhere time soon.
Right, right. I think what's more interesting is that like they use items from the house.
That is very, because that's what also made me like, I mean, we'll get into all of our theories later, but I'm like, so that shows, was this like an escalation to that went really too far of like, because it, for lack of a better word, like improvising instruments that found?
I feel that. It makes it seem like it wasn't really planned.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, DNA was not really a thing. And some of the investigators actually believe the murderers, that's how I'm going to say it from now on, like murderer or murderers.
Murders, jurders.
Stayed to clean up the crime scene and they were from the neighborhood. But other people think that since at this time, everybody was like relatively trusting, anybody would open their door for a stranger. So TBD on which, that.
Who, I mean, LOL, like never now. Except that it's one of those things, it's like, don't get in a car with strangers. I take Uber. Don't open the door for strangers. Postmates, baby. I am.
Right? Yeah. That's true. Oh my God, I did that one time just because like, someone was just ringing our doorbell like insanely, and then I opened like multiple times.
Oy.
So I finally opened it, and it was this jackass who was campaigning for this crazy guy, Curtis Sliwa, for mayor. And I was like, fuck you. Like, leave me alone. Why are, it's one thing to like do a ring and then like give wait a few minutes and leave, but he kept ringing our bell, and I was like,
oh my God. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure Curtis got 2 votes, so
literally
that method did not really work.
I know. I'm like, you're going to give me COVID and fucking bother me for this asshole? Like, whatever. Anyway, so that was that. Don't open your doors to strangers. They could be murderers or just annoying campaign people.
Yes, murderers or conservative.
Or Jehovah's Witnesses.
Yeah.
But one couple that came up was this kind of like mystery couple, basically. So a guy named Henry Cabbage, who was a local journalist, was working on a piece about the murders, and he found police tape, which like the video, in which a woman whose boyfriend lived close to the Sims said she remembered going over to their house the night they were killed, but denied responsibility.
Like what?
And yeah, I don't know. And the boyfriend also denied any involvement in the murders. Now, this is something I think I read in news reports, so I'm wondering if this supposed mystery couple is actually Vernon Fox, but we'll get there. So
true.
That's a big question mark. But another person who actually did become like a pretty...
Like the prime
suspect. Yeah, suspect was a man by the name of C.A. Roberts. He was a well-liked pastor at First Baptist Church, which was like the church there, one of, I suppose. And the guy was like a philanderer, or not a philanderer because he didn't have a wife. A womanizer.
I know that was in the doc when they were like, we put the... black light to the office, and he kept busy. And I was like, my God, how is what? No.
I mean, I get it. It's like the young, good-looking pastor, but I'm also like, aren't you not supposed to?
But I'm like, we all watched Fleabag. They didn't get to, you know what I mean? Like, come on.
Yeah. So rumors kind of started swirling that because Roberts was kind of sleeping around, that he was the murderer. And Helen also resigned from her position as church secretary days before the murder, which people thought was because maybe she like knew too much. And the funny thing is, in this documentary, is they say that as soon as Roberts was like named a suspect, the Tallahassee Police Department's phones kept ringing off the hook from just like women calling in being like, I had nothing to do with this. Because I guess all the women that he was having affairs with were like scrambling to try to like cover their asses.
Who knew? I mean, he really got them to go to confession after all. Yeah, I've been fucking the priest, but I did not do this. Yeah.
Right, right. And there was really no evidence that Helen was involved with him at all. It's just that if she's a secretary, like she probably knows everything that's going on.
Oh, I feel like if you're having an affair, your secretary knows you're having an affair if you're having an affair.
You're right. A theory, though, was that he was having an affair with Helen and kind of killed the family in a fit of like rage. But investigators kind of watched him for a while. They like tailed him. They didn't find anything that tied him to the crime. And plus, he had a pretty rock solid alibi.
Emphasis on rock solid, I would also say.
Well, yes and no. So yes, he was team chaplain for the football team. And he was at the football game. He says he was at the football game the whole time. And there is video. There are gaps in the videos. So, for instance, there was a rumor that he, disappeared at halftime and came back for the second half. Mm. And, some locals watching the videos think he came back in a different outfit. But the sheriff's office, literally kind of mapped it and, tried every single route. And they said that it was really not possible for him to get to the Sims house and come back in the gaps in the videos. So Roberts ended up resigning as pastor due to the accusations. And then years later, he died in an accident. Mm. And, there is video that shows him on the sidelines of the game, which a former state attorney, Jeremy Mutz, claims show that Roberts is innocent since he can't be in two places at once.
And this Mutz guy, he really kind of, he got fired for trying to invest, or one of the reasons, for trying to keep on investigating this, claiming that, because he really was that the police was wasting their time looking after Roberts. And then when he got fired, he posted on Facebook, they don't want me to look into this cold case for political reasons. Nothing really has, been unpacked more with that and type of stuff like that. But very, just put it really on there.
Right. I also think that the police, whoever his boss was we didn't assign you to do this.
That was their main thing. It's not your job. And, this does happen a lot of time on TV shows where detectives will randomly just get really impassioned about a case and look for it. But I guess in IRL, you usually just end up.
Right. Yeah. I guess you need the okay.
So we can jump to another suspect, Rob Howells. So he married Peggy in 1966. And according to Peggy's testimony, the day after they got married, they're driving down to Alligator Point for a honeymoon. No judgment. I'm just stating where they had their honeymoon.
Yeah.
But at this point, he starts telling Peggy about how he murdered Joy and then Helen and then Rob. Now, however, this murder sort of became local folklore of kind of just the talk around town, husbands telling their wives, I killed the Sims, and if you know what's good for you, you'll act right type of thing.
Just some nice light threats. Yeah.
Just that chill spousal talk.
Yeah.
Peggy, did say that Rob was violent. And unfortunately for her, he beat her frequently and also threatened to beat her stepson. And police were called to them for domestic issues multiple times. Peggy ended up going undercover for the Tallahassee Police Department to get a confession. So they wire her up.
This was my favorite part.
This is Lifetime.
It's The Wire. I just finished season one of The Wire. No further questions, but I was oh.
Wait, should I watch that?
Yes.
Ooh, okay. Well, because I need a new show. I want to watch that Archive 18 that's on Netflix, too.
Hmm.
Was trying to go wire her up, but Rob got tipped off by his daughter, so he made sure not to confess or say anything that could incriminate him with that. There's also not that much of a motive. The most that was being talked about was there was a rumored argument he had with Helen at the grocery store, which, I don't really... sometimes people get passionate.
I know. I guess I will say, though, I kind of feel sometimes the more we do this, the less motive really matters. It's not something that you need to really prove in court.
Because it's just some people are going to do what they're going to do.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not logical. And I feel even the people that this documentary really heavily points to, even their motive is pretty sus.
Yeah, there's no, well, that was a hard, there's no they were stealing from XYZ or this person was having a long-term affair.
Everything is pretty tenuous. So I'm kind of whatever.
Isn't
I don't.
That life?
Just because there's not much of a motive that we understand doesn't mean that it wasn't a motive to the killer, you know?
And also, especially because what we know from the crime scene or what we can put together from the crime scene is that this did seem kind of not impromptu, but it seemed to have escalated in ways where maybe the person coming in was not fully intending to do what they ended up doing, but they did that. So maybe the motive just was someone who gets set off. And that's just,
I can see that. Yeah. Kind of feel it wasn't something where they were being watched for days or
exactly
something like that. Cause I feel if that were the case, you would kind of bring your own restraints.
B-Y-O-R, yes. So the Peggy ended up delivering to the police a 32 caliber handgun as a potential murder weapon because she found that, but it was a 38 gun that was used. I mean, so it wasn't the one on hand. And also Rob's fingerprints weren't at the crime scene. He passed a lie detector test, yada, yada, yada. He was cleared.
Yep. And then there's one other guy that I actually thought was really convincing. I'm still not convinced. I mean, it's pretty sus. So there was a guy by the name of Tommy Fulgham. He was like 15 or 16 at the time of the Sims family murder. And he lived two blocks south of them in 1966. So he's just a scrawny kid, like, you know, nothing super remarkable about the kid. Later, though, he moves to Atlanta as a 29-year-old, and he kills his girlfriend, disembowels her, cuts her hands off, and puts her liver in a jar. So this is in 1978. And I think at this time he was having some kind of like psychotic episode or break. Like at first I think he worried that he was being possessed by the devil, and then he thought he was the devil. Like, it was definitely a breakdown. But what was weird about Tommy was that even when he was like 15, when the cops came around to ask people about the murder, he apparently avoided the cops. And so I don't know. I mean, that seems like really sus. A little over 10 years later, he commits this like gruesome murder. And he's living two blocks, I think, from the family at the time. I don't know. I was like, oh, I was pretty sold. Although apparently he said that he was attending a party that night of the murder, and several people corroborated his alibi. And nothing conclusive tied him. His prints didn't match the prints at the crime scene. And apparently neither surviving Sims' daughter recognized him, but I don't really see why that matters.
That's what I was also confused about, too, because it's like they also didn't see what happened. So I don't know why it would need to be someone recognized. I guess because they were going off the theory that it was someone that they would let into their home. But I also feel like, even though, like, in the Tallahassee way, they let people in, I would feel especially like a family with like a 14-year or like a kid knocks on the door. They're going to be like, hey, what do you need? You know what I mean?
Right. And one who lives like two blocks from you.
Exactly. Yeah.
But so perhaps the most credible suspects are Vernon Fox and Mary Charlie LaJoy Fox. I don't know how she pronounced it. I forgot. I watched a whole documentary. They just called her Charlie or Mary.
Yeah.
In any case, they were two teenagers who lived near the Sims house. And they both came from kind of like broken homes, checkered past kind of thing. Mary was adopted, and she said her adoptive parents were abusive towards her, both of them. Mary was pretty weird. Neighbors said that she was obsessed with death. She was caught breaking into the funeral home.
That's when it's a little too, yeah.
Yeah, the RJ, Beavis, the funeral home like director guy, was like, yeah, we had to like tell her not to come back. And in college, so she like goes to college. Apparently she has a poster above her bed that said, a tisket, a tasket, come sleep in my casket.
I mean, like, where? But also my follow-up to that is, who bought that poster? I guess maybe she made it herself, but yeah.
I don't know, but I'm like, I kind of want that poster to scare away potential suitors. Like,
that's true. You leave that on your door, no one's buzzing for Curtis.
I know. See? I think I need to put that up. And apparently she became obsessed with death around 1965. So I don't know, just kind of like a weirdo. And she was a bit of a loner, didn't have many friends. Her one friend was a guy by the name of Vernon Fox, and they were friends since elementary school. And when Mary was a teenager and Vernon was in college, they started dating. Neither set of parents approved. Whatever, I guess. And like, my impression from the documentary was that like they both just seemed like the town weirdo, like both of them.
They found each other in the weirdo.
No, yeah. They found love in a hopeless weird place. So, whatever. I would like to support, but I don't know.
I don't know if I can support.
Yes, yeah. So exactly. So Vernon ended up being discharged from the Air Force for mental health reasons. His dad was a head criminologist who taught at FSU, but his dad was also an alcoholic who cheated on his mom, which like gave Vernon a lot of problems and like gave him anger issues. And what's interesting is that the Fox property touched the Sims property, and the LaJoys lived a few blocks away. So they lived like close.
In like a kind of like.
And Vernon was kind of linked to some like peeping Tom / prowler activity in the neighborhood. A few weeks before the murder, he was spotted standing in some shrubs watching Jeannie Sims. And also, apparently, there was like this uptick in like prowler-esque activity, which stopped when Vernon was in the Air Force, but then picked back up when he came back.
Which, there was a correlation there.
My favorite part was in the documentary when they asked him about the like prowler thing. He literally goes, no.
Yeah.
No. I mean, prowler? No.
Immediately, no. Yeah.
Well, just no. No. And you're like, I'm not super convinced.
Yeah, I'm also like, that's light. Yeah, you're knowing a little too much nose. Yeah.
Yeah. So in 1987, Mary basically reached out to the sheriff because I don't know why, but she was worried about being tied to the murders. And she kind of just like wanted to see what police had on her.
It was just weird because like time has passed.
A lot of time has passed. Yeah. And basically like, I guess she was worried and she did this whole thing like very like, almost hypothetically, she was kind of like, well, let's say I did this. Like, what would happen?
She O.J. Simpson did.
Yeah. Well, there was a really good episode of Law & Order SVU where, like, the villain is like, he basically lays out an entire murder confession, but he goes, hypothetically, I went to the house. And hypothetically, I blah, blah. And, like, that's kind of what this lady did.
Mm-hmm.
In a filmed interview with police, she said, this is why I think that I went in there and did it. Vernon was in trouble. Some kind of damn trouble, and I was going to lose the only friend I had. She kind of implied that, like, Vernon was paying attention to Judy in a certain way and the prowling, and he was caught, and the Sims were going to, like, report it to the police. So Mary claims that the night of the murder, she and Vernon were at a drive-in movie. Two movies were playing that night, Doctor Who and the Daleks and Munster Go Home. I don't know if anybody's interested, but basically she told police in 1987 that she thought they stayed for two movies and left before a third movie. But the ticket taker at the theater said that they left after the first movie, and I don't think that there even was a third movie.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly, whatever. I would give that a pass. I can't remember like what I did last week. So
literally, you know. I don't know what I did yesterday.
Right. But her story has kind of changed throughout the years because on October 24th, 1966... Mary told police that she and Vernon went home after the end of the movie, the first movie, while Vernon told them on the 26th that they left after the end of the football game and they didn't stay until the end of the second movie. So in 1966, they're leaving after the second movie. Now there's a third movie. Like, I don't know what's happening.
That's the thing. Like, make it make sense.
Yeah. So their stories, like, didn't match up. And Vernon said in this documentary, which came out in 2016, that Mary picked him up around 7 o'clock. They went to the movies. Afterwards, they went to a little secluded area to get some action in the car. But in 1987, Mary told police that they weren't sexually active at the time and they went straight home after the movie. And in 1966 and 1989, they say they were low on gas, so they drove straight home. But then in 2016, Vernon's story changes. He said they drive out to Dog Lake, which is like far away. So I don't know, kind of sus.
These two are telling a lot of stories. It's kind of like the moth storytelling situation going on here.
Yeah.
And then in 1966, also Vernon said that he saw a car with a funny headlight driving slowly on Gibbs Drive near the Sims house.
Hmm.
I don't know what funny convenient means. Yeah, I'm also like, elaborate on funny headlight. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah.
I'm like, they didn't have the eyelashes on cars yet. So
oh my God, not, right?
Which, like, if anybody
they
has
didn't
that.
They didn't have 911. They're not doing the car eyelashes.
That would be so funny if that came before 911.
Yeah.
Maybe it did. So he said that the car pulled up close and opened the door like whoever was in the car was expecting to get in.
Like they were expecting Vernon to get in.
Yeah, which is kind of like weird. Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of that SpongeBob meme when he's standing in front of an open casket and he goes, okay, get in.
Oh my God, yes.
I love that one.
So, yeah, so there is this mystical car with funny headlights. And then in 2016, he said the people in the car said, quote unquote, oh, it's not him. And then they closed the door. But this was a detail that never emerged before, so I don't really know why he would be sitting on that for 40 years.
Exactly.
Like, and also their stories change so much, that's one thing you remember 40 years later. Mary does say she remembers this car stopping, and she said that when she remembered this when she went back to the sheriff's office in 87. So she did have a recall of this. Law enforcement then is kind of like, okay, do you remember this car? Because you think you saw the killer, or you worried you saw that night, yada, you know what I mean? Like,
it's kind of like, did this car, like, do you remember this car because it could have been the killer, or because you're worried who may have seen you?
Exactly.
Like, why was this noted, you know?
Very friend or foe, yes. So in 1966, Vernon said that he got home and put a movie, big movie day.
Two movies and then went and put on a movie?
I can't even sit through a miniseries, but regardless.
No, like, there's no way you did that.
But here's the interesting. Funny you said there's no way you did that, because a neighbor in 1966 reported seeing him out on the street around 11:23 p.m., at the time the sirens were sounded.
Yes, so sus.
And also she said that she saw him making very weird gestures. Again, weird gestures, funny headlights.
Funny lights, like, really, I don't know what this means. Let's get more specific.
Yeah, let's show us the routine, the step-by-step. And what is still kind of interesting is that Mary never outright denies being there.
She doesn't.
She says things like, quote unquote, I might remember being in the house. What would happen if I confess? And stuff like that. Things that are suspicious. So she's kind of doing that, like Sarah was mentioning, to like fishing for evidence to see what they have.
Fishing is a good word.
To kind of be like, okay, if I put this tidbit out, if I put this lapel here, what's gonna bite me? What's gonna come? Mm-hmm. So she also gets that if she gets it, would Vernon be thrown in prison without herself getting thrown into prison? So she has very suspicious.
Yeah.
At one point she
This is me just transcribing from the police video, by the way. Yeah.
The police video was very intense. I was like, I forgot that all those were taped, and I was like, this, and also that they were giving the college student the footage, I guess that's kind of like fair. At one point she literally says, quote unquote, could I take that $10,000 reward? You know, the $10,000 that was supposed to be the reward money, and put myself in a private hospital where I can get quality treatment.
Yeah, like, the thing is, she doesn't want to go to prison, and she makes that clear. And so she's literally like, well, what if I tell you this stuff and, like, I just check myself into, like, a nice little rehab or whatever it may be?
When it's like, yeah, most, you gotta prove yourself not to be in prison. Yeah.
And she doesn't, she literally is never like, I didn't do this, I had nothing to do with this. She was kind of like, well, like, how can I implicate Vernon without implicating myself?
Exactly.
And how can I avoid jail time?
Exactly. Very so she sketch. Really is trying. Yeah, she's trying herself. She's trying to legally blind herself. So she was smart enough to not legally give a confession with all that. So, yeah, but it did walk like a duck and talk like a duck.
Yeah. She really knew how to, like, toe that line of, like,
she quack-quacked.
It sounds like a confession to all of us lay people, but to, like, in a court of law, it wouldn't have held up as a confession, I guess.
Yeah, it's sort of like when, like, if someone's like, oh my God, he, like, heart reacts to all my stories, we're like, you're not dating. That won't hold up in a court of law.
Yeah.
The documentary said that the prosecutors thought they had enough to charge him and Mary, but not to get a conviction. So that's where it gets very tricky. But Vernon says they did get divorced in 1986. And in 1987, the alimony money ran out, which is kind of interesting, that, like, the timing of that. So divorce 86, that's when she goes, tries to get that money, honey. Mary filed to have the alimony extended, which a judge denied. So it's sort of like, was that then a weird way of her being like, fuck, I don't have alimony money, let me try to get the money from this? Was that her way of being like, okay, we got divorced, now I'm going to, like, either fake throw him under the bus, confess, because now they're not tied together, you know what I mean?
Right. That's what I just don't know. Like, I mean, the documentary kind of said, without right saying, that, like, yeah, they think that Mary did it. They think, like, she and Vernon did it. They had one friend in the whole town, and one of them, like, was gonna maybe get in trouble for, like, being a peeping Tom.
Yeah, a lot. And I don't know if you, how you're feeling. the majority after watching the documentary, everything, like, I did kind of very much gravitate to these two.
I feel like them or that kid who disemboweled his girlfriend, like that.
That's also true.
That's that. I'm like, this kid, I don't know. Go back and recheck those alibis from the party. Like, see if anybody is still riding for this guy, you know, after he's disemboweled his girlfriend. So,
well, also that would be my thing. For like teens at a party, they're having some wine coolers. They don't know what the fuck is going on. Also,
that is
very tricky for that. And also, it's like a party. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm assuming it's a party at the same time. It's like a football game party. You know what I mean? So like people are like kind of distracted, everything like that. I don't know. I'm like, I don't know who was at every, you know what I mean? Yeah. So that's, yeah.
Right. I mean, I do think that these two are also very sus. I mean, that's another thing though. I'm like, the motive is still very like, it's flimsy, but I guess you're talking about two weirdos, one of whom is obsessed with death. So.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's just, that never helps the case. Yeah. Which is why people who listen to this podcast, we should never commit a crime.
Yeah. I mean, I just wonder if there's anything, I mean, unless like Mary really is able to kind of confess, or they're able to like,
I know,
work out a deal with her, or like pretend to work out a deal with her so that like she'll implicate them. But I don't really know how else like this case would be resolved. I mean, I'm not a professional.
I know, it's one of those hard ones where it's like, I feel like we've done a lot of cases lately where it's sort of like a very clean cut. We know what happens, but this is one. And also it's been like 50 or so years by now. It's
long
to get clarity for any of that, which is hard, which is unfortunate.
Yeah. But I don't trust these two.
I don't trust these two. The only person I trust in my goddamn life is Jorge. Because he gives us with the game. And I know he would watch. Maybe I could see him watch two movies too.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I can watch two movies in one night.
Yeah.
I love movies.
Movie night.
All right. So for today's game, I thought we could do a little foray into the world of sports, since we all love sports so much.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
And because of that big, football game that was happening there. And I'm going to hit you guys with some amazing football trivia to test how much you know about America's favorite sports.
This will be fun.
This will be.
My boyfriend's very into football, so maybe like some of that stuff has rubbed off.
I hope so for you. I mean, we'll say.
Danny, do you watch football?
No.
Not at all. You spend your Sundays?
No.
Oh, I just drink on Sundays. That's
I'll go to, like, they have usually good bars, have good like deals for like food and everything for that. So I'll go to a bar for that deal.
Same.
The one. Yeah. Yeah. I'll get some mozzarella sticks. Hell yeah.
Yeah, I would just use Sunday Funday to like wings, drink and meet people.
Exactly. But now I'm at the age where I'm like, a Sunday? No. I'm relaxing. No.
I got things to do tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. So kids, have fun for us, but I can't. But yeah, it's okay.
All right. Danny, you're up first. And here is the first question. How many yards long is an official NFL football field?
I don't even know what a yard is. okay, I know it's like 20 yards, 40 yards?
That is incorrect, Danny. The correct answer is 120 yards.
Oh, shit.
I was going to say 250, so. So. Whoops.
Most people, I think, would have guessed 100 yards because, you know, it's 50 and 50 yards is, you know, each team has like 50 yards to go.
Oh, then what's the 20?
Do you count the end zone? Is that
exactly
why?
Exactly. The end zones on each end of the field are an additional 10 yards.
And if you count there the cow zone. You're over your Weight Watchers point for the night.
All right, Sarah, this one's for you. Which of the following positions can run down the field and catch balls thrown by the quarterback? Is that the cornerbacks?
Can't everyone?
The running backs?
Great.
Or the tight ends?
I don't understand why everybody can't do that. I thought that was the whole thing.
I thought so too. All
right, I will give you this. Every player on the offense could actually catch the ball, but whose job is it?
I mean, I'm gonna go with the running back.
That is incorrect.
Fuck.
Is it the tight end?
It is the tight end.
What do these people do then?
You know, I think are two about tight ends, don't you, Danny?
You know, dabble.
The running back, Sarah, are actually the guys who grab the ball and run with it. So typically the quarterback hands them the ball.
They're like, 42.
That's exactly.
Thank you.
Hut, hut.
Yeah, like, exactly, what? Exactly.
Whose job is it to like just say those words?
The quarterback, that's
typically
right?
A quarterback. Yeah, he's calling out the plays. And the reason why it's so sort of stunted or kind of like syncopated is because they're trying to trick the other team
so that
they don't know when they're actually starting to play.
They should sing songs. Like, that would be so much better. Like, what? Like, throw them off.
I'm like imagining that like TikTok meme where it's like, yo, I never fucked Wayne, I never fucked Drake. And then they like
like pull up in the Sri Lanka, huh, and then exactly, then you get a touchdown.
All right, Danny, back to you. No one on the board so far.
Off to a great start.
A player is considered down when which body part hits the ground? Is it their hand, their knee, or their shoulder?
I want to say knee. Wait. Because if you fall down, because they can't throw it from there. Yeah, knee.
That is correct, Danny. On the board. Well nice. Done. It is, in fact, the knee. That's when they're actually considered to be down.
Because I know sometimes they'll just like.
Yeah, you can just like take a knee.
To keep it. Yeah.
Yeah, you take a knee. Right.
A good
right.
defense play.
When they're all right. Up, Sarah, Danny's on the board. Here we go. How many points would scoring a safety get your team?
What is a safety?
I don't even know what that is. Oh my God, this is horrible.
Oh, it's not multiple choice, Sarah. You just gotta go for it.
I know. Two?
That is correct, Sarah.
Oh, well good. Done. Is that when you run the ball after you score a touchdown?
No, that is a two-point conversion.
Whatever, I guess the right number for the wrong reasons, but I'll take it.
USD to Euros, a conversion. Like.
So a safety is when the opposing team tackles you in your own end zone. So they basically, like, you're so far back that you're in your own place. So if they tackle you there, they get 2 points and they get the ball.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that. Okay.
Yeah. All right, Danny. This is a tie game. Okay. Wow. This is so exciting.
Deflategate.
When that 2-point conversion we just mentioned, when would you try to score a 2-point conversion? Is it? This is multiple choice. Instead of punting the ball.
How can he get some multiple choice? Rude.
On yeah, this will really help down, me. After recovering a fumble on the 35th yard line, or after scoring a touchdown.
If you score the touchdown, then it starts back at the the 35th. No, that's too close to the middle, so you're not that. Or what was the first one?
On second down.
No, because you still have more downs after that.
And the other one is instead of punting the ball.
No, because the punt would be for the other. I'm going to do the 35 thing.
That is incorrect, Danny. It is, in fact, after scoring a touchdown.
Oh, wow. That was the one I wrote off immediately at the first.
Immediately.
Wait.
So after you score a touchdown, that gives you 6 points. And typically, you could kick the ball into the field goal to get an extra point. But if you're able to get the ball into the end zone again, you get 2 points. That's the 2-point conversion.
Oh, so you can ask to do a safety?
It's not the same. Not really. You can try to go for 2 points instead of just the extra point, which is the kick. All right. Well, Sarah, this is the last question. And
oh, gosh.
Okay.
The game is tied, so you have the chance here to take it home.
Let's go.
And score a touchdown. If you want. Sarah, how many players are there on the field on any given play?
Oh, God.
And this is not multiple choice?
I can give you multiple choice. Okay, it's only fair. It's only fair I give you multiple choice. All right. Is it 20?
Fuck.
22 or 24?
Oh, well, great, because I was going to say 12. So, wait, are we talking about both teams, though, or
both
just one?
Both teams together. Both teams together.
Oh, yeah. Okay, then I'll go with 24.
That is incorrect, Sarah. It is 22. 22 players.
Fuck. They have 11 people on a side?
11 that is, players, yeah.
That's so uneven. Oh, because the quarterback would probably make it uneven because he's the
exactly. Well,
my God.
He's the quarterback. All right. Well, we have a tie game, and it's time for me to find a tie-breaking question.
Ooh.
Oh, great.
Stand by.
Jorge was not planning for us to be this stupid about football.
Yeah, which honestly he should have.
I know. Yeah, I'm slightly embarrassed.
I am the loser of today's game. All right. There are two teams tied for most Super Bowl wins. How many wins have both of those teams won?
Oh,
man.
Oh.
And you will both say it at the same time to make sure you're not stealing each other's answers.
Fuck, okay. I think I know this.
Are you ready to guess, Sarah? Whoever's closest is going to win the point and the game.
Okay.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Eight.
Oh.
Did we both say eight? Oh, no. We need a tiebreaker for the tiebreaker.
All right. Here's going to be the tiebreaker for the tiebreaker.
Should we guess what the teams are?
Yes. Oh. You are going to guess who the teams are. By the way, the correct answer was 6.
Oh, not bad.
Why did I think someone had 7? Okay. Interesting.
I don't know. All right. You both should pick a team at the same time and say it. Same rules. Are you ready?
Or should we write it down and then show it?
All right. Write it down.
Okay.
If you both pick the same team, I'm going to lose my mind.
All right. You ready?
And show.
Patriots? Fuck. We both said it. Oh, my God.
Oh, I only can name 5 teams. So
all right. So let's try to guess the other one. The other team that has won 6 Super Bowls.
Fuck.
It was the Patriots. Well done. See, you know a thing or two about football.
Yes.
I more so know about their old man guy kissing their kid on the lips.
Oh my God, right?
All right, so this last question, depending on what team you choose, whichever of your picks has won the most Super Bowls will win.
Oh,
so that'll settle it, unless you guys pick the same team again.
Okay, well then I'm going to go with the safe answer.
I don't know if my answer is safe or not.
All right.
Let's reveal. Danny, what do you got?
The Eagles.
You got the Eagles and Sarah.
The Giants. I know they won at least 2 Super Bowls.
Well, I know they haven't won in a while, which is why I didn't pick them.
I know they have 2 at least.
Okay, we have a winner.
Ooh.
The Eagles have won.
Damn it.
1 Super Bowl.
Oh.
However, the Giants have won 4 Super Bowls.
Yay!
Well done, Sarah. You are the winner.
Who won 6?
The Steelers, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh. I would have never put them in a million years.
Never would have put them, but yes, I know they are good.
All right.
Well, congratulations, Sarah.
Thank you.
Get it, girl. Sarah Steelers.
The Sarah Steelers.
There we go.
You have 2 points on this year's championship. Ooh. You have taken an early lead, but we'll see if Danny can catch up.
I mean, I like this.
We'll do like a big trivia bowl at the end or something like that. Oh, for all the marbles.
The trivia bowl.
I don't know. Oh, well, that was fun. Thank you, Jorge. I got to go play football now.
I know. Maybe I'll watch on Sunday.
Yes. It's true. It's the playoffs. I mean, I'll be watching on Super Bowl Sunday, so there's that.
Okay. All right.
Mostly for the commercials, but you know.
Yeah. And the halftime performance will be good this year, I think.
That's true. Well, you know, if you're watching football, if you're not, I don't know, let us know. Not Know the True Crime. Give us your episode recommendations.
Yes, please.
We are using them. I will say, like, I get so many that I'm like, oh, wow. But we do use them.
And if you think you got a really good one, just bump it back up at the top of the DM list.
Yes.
Really
also, like, tell us what it's about. Because I'm lazy. That's
helps.
The thing. I don't want to go Google some person's name. Like, sell it to me, you know? Give us all the stuff up front.
Ooh, it's like Shark Tank. Yes, a little bit.
Yeah, somebody recommended this good podcast. It was called something Bobby. And it's about this, like, crazy catfish.
That's the girl I slapped about.
Oh.
So we should do... Okay, we'll do that, maybe.
Yeah, it's called Bobby.
Yes, because I remember I was laughing. It's like Sweet James from Orange County.
There we go. So interesting. Okay, that could be one. So we got a request for that. But otherwise, just DM us. Not Another True Crime on Instagram. Join our Facebook group, Not Another True Crime group. Just say that you listen to the podcast in the questions.
It's so easy.
We'll let you in.
That's all we ask.
You can follow me on Instagram, Sarah Lameme. Danny, sorry I interrupted you.
Oh my God, no, you're fine. I was gonna say, while you're doing all the following, make sure you also rate, review, and subscribe to us. If you have not, if this is your first time listening, God bless. If you are regular, we love you. Let everyone know you love us in the review section. And you can follow me at Kashmir Danny, Kashmir with a K.
And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Not Another True Crime Podcast is produced by Jorge Morales Pico and Sean Kilby. Our hosts are Sarah Lameme and Danny Murphy. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Sarah Lameme. Be sure to follow at NATC Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And send us your emails to natc@betches.com. Betches.